Stay tuned for The Lynn Show. Today, I'm airing interviews with two of the principal players of the upcoming production of Cat on a Hot Tin Roof at the Players Theater, which will open day after tomorrow on September 3rd. First, my interview is with Catherine Parks. Catherine is playing the iconic role of Maggie the Cat, around whom a lot of this play revolves. And then I'm interviewing Alan Kretschmar, who plays the patriarch, Big Daddy, who is in many ways the mover and shaker of this play. This is, of course, Tennessee Williams' remarkable drama about, well, why don't I let the players tell you? So hang on. Here come the show.
Hearing from an inner voice, finding choice where there's no choice, with gentle prodding from the voice. Oh, you really can. Deeper, deeper down you dive, where the child's gone to survive, finding wisdom's other words. Oh, you really can. From nowhere, sitting in my own soft lap, with all the time for us to chat, and my resources all on tap. Oh,
and welcome to The Lynn Show. The Lynn Show is about being who you really are. And as a therapist, it is clear to me that so many of us are not being who we really are. We're being the person people told us we had to be or should be or even told us we were, or the person we have somehow decided we must be in order to be loved, hired, taken care of, any of those things. But in the end, the price is too great. The price is usually one of regret, sadness, despair, depression, sometimes I think even illness. In any case, the Lynn Show is about making the point that there is a you, that you really are, and that you have the right to be it. And that if for some reason you have had to sacrifice some of that you, it may not be too late to recover it. If you want to ask me questions about that, you can do that by going up on my website, thelynnshow.com, thelynnshow. Don't leave the E out of Lynn. Up there, you can not only click on the tab for email me and ask me any questions, you can buy my book. You can get me to come and speak to your group or organization, and you can listen to all of the shows I have ever done, all of the interviews I've ever done, including the two that I'm airing today. The first one is with the extraordinary Catherine Parks. If you haven't seen Catherine, and if you live in Sarasota, I'm sure that you have, you are in for an amazing treat, both to listen to her in this interview and to see her as Maggie the Cat in Cat on a Hot Tin Roof. These interviews take up most of the show, so I'm not going to talk anymore. I'm simply going to say, here now, the beautiful, exquisitely talented Catherine Parks. Okay, so I am here with Catherine Parks, and I'm interviewing Catherine at this time because she is about to be Maggie the Cat in Cat on the Hot Tin Roof. But if you have attended the Players or Venice Theater or the Golden Apple when it was here or Manatee, then the chances are good you have seen Catherine because she has been everywhere doing everything. Catherine is an actor, she is a singer, she is a dancer, she does everything. And I'm going to ask Catherine what I ask everybody, which is, do you remember the very first time in your life when acting or singing or dancing called you, seemed attractive, got your attention?
Yes. I was raised in a house with professional singer and actress, my mother, and professional pianist, my father. And it seemed so obvious that I was going to go into the performing arts that I never really felt like I picked it. It more just picked me. I was never really exposed to much else, so I always thought, yeah, maybe I could be a good lawyer or a good doctor or good whatever, but this is what's in front of me and this is what I love, and just sort of naturally fell into place. When I was 5, I wanted to be a principal ballerina. I was sophisticated enough not just to say ballerina, but principal ballerina. And I remember, I guess my mother must have taken me to different ballets or something when I was young, and I just knew that that's what I wanted to do. And I was very mad at her because she made me wait till I was 6 to start taking lessons, and it was not soon enough.
No. So the first thing that drew you was dance.
Yeah, actually, the first thing I think I saw ballet, and I just wanted to do that right then and there.
Yeah.
6, I started to take ballet, and actually, I took it for a number of years, and I got some great training.
And you loved it.
And I loved it.
So you were right.
Yeah, I absolutely loved it. And eventually I was doing it probably 3 or 4 times a week. And I also have asthma. And I started to get sick all the time with like some sort of bronchial infection. And I was just having so many issues breathing that eventually I had to stop because my body was like, Catherine, you can't do this. Fortunately, I've grown out of that. But there was a time where, like, you know, once every 5 weeks, I was really sick with a bronchial infection.
Jesus.
Yeah.
Really?
I got really, really used to the nebulizer.
Oh, no.
I know. It was weird.
It's one thing to have this idea that the performing arts is where I'm supposed to be, I'm going to be. But one can have that idea and not have all the talent that you have. So, first of all, I've seen you dance things other than ballet, so you must have studied something else, and then you've got this amazing voice, so you must have at some point sung.
Yes. Well, so I took ballet and jazz in my youth. It wasn't really until high school, but I started taking tap because of my ballet training, whether or not I could get all the sounds, I looked really good doing it. So tap teachers who'd think I was phenomenal, but if they really like stopped to listen to my sounds,
right.
You know, with all. But as I've matured, I love tap, and I've done a number of tap shows, and I love it when I get the opportunity to do that. And then vocally, I love to sing, and also the older I get, the more I love it. It hasn't always come easily, though. You know, there's head voice, there's mix, there's belt, and there's chest. And I was always great with the head voice, but it's taken me a really long time to even out my sound across the board. It was something I struggled with a lot, and it was taunting me all for many, many years throughout schools. Because I went to performing arts high school, I went to Booker, and then I went to the University of Miami, and I studied with the Musical Theater Conservatory. And, you know, I always heard from my professors, do you want to be a classical vocal major or you know, do you want to do musical theater? And I was like, no, of course I want to do musical theater. But, you know, nobody really gave me the tools vocally. I didn't really connect with a teacher to really help me learn how to find my mix and my belt until really the last, you know, 6 or 7 years.
For people who don't know anything about voice and voice training,
to think of it like in extremes, you know, a head voice is like an opera singer, and a chest voice or a belt is more like a contemporary pop singer.
Right. And then for a singer who wants to do musical theater, you have to be able to move smoothly from one to the other. And when you don't, they call it a break.
Right.
And it sounds just like a break.
Yeah.
And it's not good.
Right.
So what I think you're saying is that it took you a while to figure out to learn the technique to smooth it out so you didn't have a break.
Exactly.
Is that right?
Exactly.
Correct.
Yeah, and not just that, but to have a pleasant sounding lower voice as well. Not that it, in my mind, it was always pleasant, but, you know, I think it's definitely something that I've worked a lot on. And I will say, one of the people who's really helped me with that is Carlo Thomas, who is a voice teacher in Sarasota. So I thank him for that.
Yes, Carlo, the genius. I want to say that you have to have an extraordinary technique. I saw you in violin. I mean, you were unbelievable, and you were singing virtually the entire time.
Yeah.
Just to get through one of those performances requires incredible control, and to do it day after day or night after night, I was just stunned. So you clearly have pulled it off.
Yeah, thank you.
Oh, my God. Okay, so we have the singer, we have the dancer, but I also know that you're a wonderful actor, and we're about to talk about an acting role where there is no singing and dancing.
Right.
Right. Okay, so talk to me about that.
Well, okay, so you've heard about the ballerina, you've heard about the singer.
Right.
Well, when I got past the principal ballerina stage, I always felt like acting was something I excelled at and always kept really close to my heart. You know, when I was in high school and we started working on monologues, everything kind of just came to me pretty naturally, and I really enjoyed creating a color of a character. And, you know, I've been fortunate to do some great acting pieces. Maybe nothing quite so vivid as Cat on a Hot Tin Roof, so I'm really excited to create and be this character of Maggie the Cat.
Vivid?
Yeah.
Can you say another word for me that
you know, such a range of tactics and personality and
She's many different women.
Yes. Yeah.
And you have to be them.
Yeah.
Like Violet was pretty much one person all the way through.
Right,
right,
right, right. Yes. And Violet too, though, even though she was one person, it was definitely a stretch for me, because I'm much easier in Anna and the King and I, or Maria and the Sound of Music, and Violet was definitely something where I had to get a little bit more like grounded, a little bit more not sophisticated.
Gritty.
Yeah, gritty.
Right.
Yeah, and I think for me, because of my ballet training, and also because of my mother, who is very feminine, strong, I think having her raise me, it helped me kind of turn into that style of lady as well. when I go against that, it can be really fun for me to access different parts of who I am. And I think too, you know, maybe every woman has so many different components to her. And what's fun for an actor is you really get to explore parts of you that you don't normally have an excuse to delve into.
Or demonstrate,
yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, in Cat on the Hot Tin Roof, I can be just no filter sexy. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm trying to seduce my husband who won't sleep with me. Mm-hmm. And it's fun to explore that side of you, you know, to just go for it, you know, and know that it's okay.
It's okay,
yeah.
Exactly.
I think we're all a little bit of a chameleon, and you need to find the part of you that is that character and embrace it. And it's really fun to do that. And I'd love to mention this too. You know, as I've made singing so big in my life recently, I recently did a one-woman show where it was basically me singing and speaking a lot, but as I've studied voice, it's been really cool, now that I'm really doing a straight play, to find all the parallels in singing and acting. Mm. And, for example, breath control, mm-hmm. you know? With a song, you don't want to take a breath until maybe there's a comma, or especially if there's a period. You'll do a couple, you know, lines of a song, and you're going to go as long as you can before you take a breath because you want it to be legato and smooth. So the same is true in, like, Cat on a Hot Tin Roof.
In dialogue.
As I'm learning my monologues and whatnot, you can't just take a breath in the middle of a sentence, right?
No, right.
So I'm working on it so that I know, okay, take a deep breath here because you can't take another one for about two sentences or whatever.
Yeah,
you know,
there's
a rhythm also to this. I think especially because it's a southern dialect, in learning the lines and in speaking them, there's a rhythm. And when I was memorizing it, I heard the rhythm. Even if I didn't know, like, what words came next, I knew it was like, da, 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 da. So then I would search, you know, oh, that must be these lines. So it was weird. It was, as I memorized it, it was a lot like learning a song.
Yes, I hear it.
So that was really interesting to be able to apply lessons across the board.
Yeah. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about Cat.
Okay.
Make-believe. Although it's probably true. I was going to say, make believe that there are people who are listening to this who have never heard or seen it.
Sure.
Which actually is certainly possible. I mean, the movie was, I don't know what, 30 years ago or something?
Yeah, it was the 50s. Late 50s.
Right, and this is not a play that gets done that much.
No.
So talk about it.
Sure. Well, it's written by Tennessee Williams, and it's about a lot of things, you know, but on the surface, let's say it follows the story of Maggie the Cat. Or, you know, it's everyone's story, but since I'm living it, I'll share it from my point of view. Essentially, it's a family on a southern plantation, 28,000 acres, which is huge.
Yes.
And the patriarch, is that
yes.
the word? He's dying of cancer. And his two sons and their wives are squaring off to inherit this plantation. There's lots of baggage on both sides. And Maggie the cat is married to Brick, who is the younger son. And Brick is an alcoholic. And he won't sleep with Maggie because of something she did. And so she is doing everything she can to get her husband back and in love with her, and to secure, you know, their future by way of succession from his father.
Mm-hmm.
And it's definitely packed with emotion and ups and downs and humor and family drama and lots of questions about who you are and your sexuality, and I think that kind of sums it up.
Yeah, Tennessee Williams, always pretty much family drama.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
So you have spent your life really, in one way or another, becoming this thing, living this thing, this performing thing, singer, dancer, actor, you know. So is there anything you would say about what that's like?
I mean, it's definitely something inside of me that's saying, you know, you want to do this, you need to do this. I think without that, I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing.
Are you talking about being driven?
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. You got to be very driven. And as I'm getting older, what's exciting is creating my own art, you know, not having to rely so much on someone being like, here, you know, here's a part in a play.
Right.
As I've grown, you know, maybe you get a little less scared, you get a little wiser, and so this is why I recently did a one-woman show. Also, you know, you get savvy in the ways of the world and how things work. So if there's something I want to do, I'm not necessarily going to wait around for someone to ask me to do it.
Lovely.
You know.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, other than that, my biggest day-to-day struggle / challenge / get over yourself, Catherine, is a lot of the people that I went to school with, you know, their careers took them, rightly so, to New York or LA. And so staying in Sarasota has been something that I have struggled with a little bit, because you kind of wonder, well, if I was in New York, how would I fare? So that really hasn't left me. Yeah. And I, on the flip side, I feel so incredibly lucky that I've gotten so many opportunities here that, you know, I know I wouldn't have if I were in New York and really trying to make a living off of this. I would have to go a lot where the wind takes me, you know. I would have to do roles that I don't want. I'd have to go places I don't necessarily want to be. Whereas here, you know, I can really focus on things that I feel passionate about. So I think that that's a huge advantage to staying here. And I also think the longer I've been in Sarasota, the more opportunities are arising for artists. And the more, not just me, but other people are like, you know what? You don't have to wait for someone else to give you an opportunity. We can make art happen wherever we want. So there's a lot of great independently produced theater and film and things that are going on here that is fun to be a part of.
So you're talking a little bit about the trade-off between trying to make the career support you and having an opportunity to do the thing, right?
Right. Yeah, because, you know, I do have a day job as well, which I've been very fortunate is something that I love to do as well. I do blogging and social media, and now I'm actually hosting a show for Michael Saunders and Company. I just started hosting something called The Saunders in 60, and it is once a week. It's a 60-second video about lifestyle and real estate in our area. And it is so much fun with all my ideas. So I write it.
So then I didn't ask you about the writing.
Yeah.
Because clearly the one-woman show included your own writing.
Exactly.
And this includes your own writing.
Yeah.
Have you worked at writing as a skill? Or
yeah. I've always loved to write, and I've been blogging for Michael Saunders for about 3 years now. Mm-hmm. So that's writing.
That's, you know, all the time.
All the time. And with the Saunders in 60, I'm writing a 60-second, you know, whatever about real estate and lifestyle. But I'm trying to not just make it facts. I'm trying to make it have personality. And I'm trying to have fun with being who I am. So each episode is, I think, entertaining. I work with Mark Palmer of Mars Vision. We shoot 60 seconds in one, you know, sitting, and I'm getting really good. I'm getting it on like the second or third try, and I get to have a lot of fun with it. Mm-hmm. And more than that, I get to be on camera, which is a huge love of mine. And you can find it right now. We're posting it on our YouTube channel, Michael Saunders and Company YouTube channel. I think it's YouTube/SarasotaRE for real estate. And I'm doing one a week, and it's amazing. I'm getting my hair and makeup done by Fresh Salon and getting clothing from them.
Wow.
Yep. So it looks very polished.
Ooh.
And, you know, it's something I've also always wanted and was interested in. I actually minored in broadcasting in college.
I was just going to say, this is a reel, isn't it?
Yeah. And so it's very easy to just sort of, When you're well-versed in the performing arts, it's easy to kind of take off one hat and put on another. So this is something that is amazing that I get to do now. It blows my mind that here I am, you know, doing a day job, and yet here I am getting paid to...
I was just going to say, and you're getting paid for it.
Yeah, to host and kind of be a spokesperson almost for this incredibly reputable company who, yep, by the way, you know, sales volume last year was over $2 billion. So it's nothing, you know, to, what's that expression?
Sneeze at.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm having fun with it, and we've only done 10 episodes.
Mm-hmm.
So one a week, you know.
Many, one a week is a lot.
Yeah.
It's,
yeah,
a lot to write and, uh-huh, and shoot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but we have a good system down. And
you have to keep coming up with stuff then.
Yeah. It's great though, you know, because it actually, because of all the blogging I've always done, I've got something of a content calendar ready to go. And
give me an example.
You know, I'll talk about a beautiful property on the water that, mm-hmm, you know, everyone looks at and drools over. And, mm-hmm, and I'll not just say it's a four-bedroom house, present it in a way, what do I really like about it, you know, mm-hmm, trying to make it personal. And then, you know, an event that's coming up. So when Katz was at the Manatee Performing Arts Center, which was amazing, by the way, I talked about that. And like the last one I did, out of 750 top brokerages in the country and a little bit beyond, Michael Saunders and Company was rated best website.
Wow.
Yeah. It's really a big deal.
It's a very big deal.
Yeah, and I had a hand in the website content, by the way.
Uh-huh.
And so I talked about that in the Saunders in 60.
Well, and who knows, this could turn into some kind of broadcasting gig.
Yeah, I hope so, you know, I hope...
Well, as I said, you'll have a reel.
Right.
You'll have a reel of you on camera.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. It's wonderful. And, I mean, you can do anything. I mean, you could write it, you could perform it, you could speak it, you could sing it, you could dance it.
Yeah, I know. You wait one day, I'll put tap dancing into it. And so all of this performing that I've done has also had to be around a day job, you know. But like I said, I think you can make opportunities wherever you are.
Well, and it sounds like even your day job is giving you an opportunity to do some performing.
Exactly.
Right?
they've been very supportive, so... And I think, you know, even those who are doing really well anywhere in the performing arts, they still have to have income, not just from their art. So it's, I think it's a struggle wherever you are, you know, but I've been very lucky. Sarasota has been very good to me.
Yeah, I don't think it's luck, but, you know, I mean, it's quite clear that you're extraordinarily talented. Sarasota's lucky to have you.
Thanks.
Because when there's a role like this... It has to be yours.
Thanks.
You know?
Thank you.
Are you planning to do your one-woman show again or another one?
Perhaps. Yeah, I did this thing called Secrets and Sequins, and I read excerpts from my diaries that I've kept since I was 11.
Mm.
And I sang, you know, lots of show tunes that sort of worked for those moments in your life. You know, I would love to do it again. It's not something, there's only so many hours in the day, so it's
yes.
not something I'm pushing right now, mm-hmm. but if the opportunity avails itself, you know, I'll definitely make it happen. You know, after Cat is over, maybe I'll think
I was just going to say, you have a full-time job where you are hosting
yeah.
a show, where you are doing all this stuff, then you're learning your lines, then you're going to be working, oh, yeah, really.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
It's there. It's like, I've got the book ready. I've got the costume. It's there when I need it, so.
Yeah. This is wonderful. So when is Cat?
Cat on the Hot Tin Roof
yes.
runs September 3rd through the 13th at the Players. And I think it's Tuesday through Saturday at 7:30 and then Sundays at 2.
And tickets can be gotten at the Players.
Yep.
Right. Okay, good. All right. Thank you so much, Catherine.
You're welcome.
Wonderful.
It's my pleasure.
I'm really looking forward to it.
Thank you.
So as you can hear, Catherine Parks is one of the lucky ones. She not only knew from the beginning what she wanted to do. At 5 years old, she was already planning her career as a principal ballerina. But she had not only support from her family, but modeling from her family. Her mother and her father said with their words, with their behavior, with their lives, that it was not only okay, it was not only desirable, it was essential to follow your dream, to be who you are, to live the life that was meant for you. And so it was possible for Catherine to evolve from dancing to singing to acting to writing to whatever took her fancy, to whatever called her, to whatever, as she said, she knew she needed to be. And as a result, we have a really relatively young woman who's extraordinarily skilled in all of these ways. And she makes the point that so many creative people do, so many people who have made an art their life, that there's a trade-off to being who you really are. Catherine speaks of the trade-off of trying to make a living at this, which would require her to do a lot of things she didn't want to do, go places that she didn't want to be, and maybe not work. Doing everything that she can and wants to do, but not making a living at it. And she makes the choice that pretty much every one of the artists that I have interviewed has made. And that is to give herself to the work. To love it. To do it. To appreciate it, to regret what she can't have, but not to let that stop her from being who she is. I'm sure that having listened to Catherine, you are eager as I am to see her go for it in Cat on a Hot Tin Roof. The next interview I'm doing is with Alan Kretschmar, who is Big Daddy, the patriarch of the family in Cat on a Hot Tin Roof. And Alan is yet another one who knew from the beginning what he wanted to do. And though early on, it looks as though he's going to make a life with what is his life's work, and he does for a while, there's a glitch. But I'm going to let Alan tell you that. So here now is Alan Kretschmar. Okay, I'm here with Alan Kretschmar, and I'm explaining to Alan that I interview people who make their life or their living within art.
I certainly do, or try to.
Yes, so well, that's why you're here.
Right.
That's why you're here. And because I know that you will be appearing in a production of Cat on a Hot Tin Roof, mm-hmm. I'm assuming that the art to which you are at least giving some of your life is acting.
That certainly is it, acting.
Yes, mm-hmm. Okay, good. All right, good. So I only ask one question.
Okay.
And that is, do you remember the very first time that performing, making people laugh, standing up in front of everybody, any of that stuff appealed to you, drew you, called you, any of that?
Yeah, actually it was on a bus. Not a school bus, it was just a bus. I rode it by myself, by the way. Back then you still could, you know. Going from my home at that time in Crown Point, Indiana to Gary, Indiana, I was less than 10 years old.
Uh-huh.
I was doing just taking the bus to go to Gary, Indiana, where I had my favorite baseball card shop.
Wow.
And, and I started singing Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer for everybody on the bus.
Do you know why?
And I don't know why. The bus driver, I think, was just one of those friendly bus drivers, you know, who said, hey, kid, what's your name? You know, what do you like to do? You know, and, oh, I like to sing, because I'd already been singing. Singing for as long as I can remember. And I just, what's your favorite song? I said, I don't know, it's Christmas time. I like Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. So I sang Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer for the entire bus and got lots of applause. That started it, you know.
So, I'll bet you did. But back up a little bit. You said you were singing forever?
Yeah, as long as I can remember, I would leave my house and I would go into my parents' car, which was an old white Oldsmobile at the time, and I would just start singing.
Really?
By myself in the car, and the neighbors would call my mother and father and say, you know, your son is sitting in the car singing.
Really?
I guess I just didn't want to disturb them or something. They were either sleeping or watching television.
So how old are you when you're singing in the car?
Probably about the same time, a little less than 10, maybe 7, 8 years old.
So do you remember when you got drawn to music? I mean, the first time you heard a song or the first time you learned a song or any of that?
My mother had bought me a record album of, I think, Rudy Valley telling popular fairy tales and then singing. One side was him telling, like he would tell the story of Rapunzel or of the fisherman and the flounder, and then on the other side he would sing, you know, favorite, you know, children's songs.
Yeah.
I think that's what got me started, because I just played this record over and over and over again.
Wow. You know, and so I'm assuming that that's some of the songs that you would sing, is the ones that,
right. Mm-hmm.
Right, that yes. You learned from that.
Anything that my mother would bring home, you know, as far as a record or, you know.
So they would bring home records, mm-hmm. not just for you, but
right,
for themselves.
And I would just, hey, that's kind of catchy, and I would just start singing it, you know.
Did they sing?
No, my folks didn't have any theatrical talent at all. My dad was a farmer, my mother was just a housewife.
My goodness. So it just sounds like music spoke to you right off
the
bat.
Yeah, the arts just spoke to me, music and drama.
yeah. Okay, so you get your first real taste of other people like this, and
right.
I like that, right, at 10 on the bus. It's amazing.
Right, yeah.
Okay, good. So, did you take voice lessons? Did you take acting lessons? Did you perform in school?
Only in high school. You know, I was in the choir in high school, and so you got technical lessons there as part of the choir. And I took drama in high school.
You took drama in high
mm-hmm.
school, right?
Right.
So
I was never tutored. I just took classes as part of high school, my regular education.
So, did you at that point think that this was something you might like to do with your life?
Or? Oh, definitely. I think it's always been what I've wanted to do with my life. Yeah.
Really?
I think my very, very, if you had asked me when I was very young,
yeah.
I think I remember my mother telling me that I said I wanted to be a judge.
but that
went away very quickly when I started singing on the bus.
Yeah. You know. That's right.
Right.
It's much more fun.
Right. I also, you're causing me to remember things I haven't remembered in years.
Yeah.
There was a used car sale. There was a used car lot down the street from where we lived, 111 Summit Street, Crown Point, Indiana. And they were having a big sale. They had balloons, and they were giving out candy and everything. And I remember standing now in the back of a flatbed truck, you know, singing about what wonderful sales they were having on the cars.
You were making up the song.
And the owner came out and said, hey, keep doing that, kid. You're attracting a crowd. You know, so, you know, oh, you know, this Ford is magnificent, buy this Ford, you know, whatever.
That's hilarious.
You love this Toyota, buy it right now. Whatever, but...
And so how old are you then?
Probably 9, yeah.
Yeah,
it wasn't long after the Rudolph experience.
No, this is fascinating. So, you know this is not typical.
I don't know. I don't know. I didn't...
Well, I know you hadn't thought about it, but...
I didn't do much self-analysis back then.
Well, it is not even not self-analysis. I mean, you don't find a lot of kids breaking into song, making up songs at the age of... So, do you play an instrument?
No. My mother tried to get me piano lessons.
Yeah.
We had a nice old lady down the street who gave piano lessons, and I didn't take to it for some reason. I wish I had.
Yeah.
Because, man, I could have been self-sustaining, you know. I could have been, you know.
Playing and singing.
Playing and singing,
right.
You know.
Yeah. Well, okay, so high school, you get into drama classes.
Right.
Right.
Did all the dramas, you know, the high school drama club, did all the shows.
Yeah.
Became the local, the Crown Point is a very small town. It's most famous for, I think, in 1924, Rudolph Valentino married his second wife there or something, as he was passing through. So they had a restaurant called Valentino's. And I got, you know, in all the shows, I became the local celebrity, and I'd walk down the street, you know, and of course, then you're done. When everybody says, oh, there's the guy who's in all those shows.
Really?
You're so good. We saw you in South Pacific. You were so funny. You know, so when you're a local star in your hometown, you're done.
Oh, my God.
That's
amazing. No, it's true. It's true. Okay, so you get out of high school. Then what do you do?
I went to college. I went to Indiana University for acting. And
What did your family think of this?
They thought, you know, my dad was kind of like, oh, come on.
Yeah, really?
Only the sons of the producers make it.
Yeah, right.
You know, you got to know somebody. You got to be related to somebody. Come on.
Right.
My mother was like, don't discourage him, you know? Go for it, you know? And they did.
Mm-hmm.
And I got a merit scholarship, and so, you know, that helped them.
Right.
The whole thing.
Okay, so you went to college and you majored in theater?
In theater, right.
And with a specialty in acting, or?
Acting. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I was never much interested in the technical side because I'm all thumbs. You know, I was never much for, you know.
You were a performer.
Right. You had to take some as part of the regular curriculum.
Right.
But I'm much more at home on the other side, performing on the stage.
Okay. So you get out of college, and
mm-hmm.
what?
And then reality sets in, you know. Next!
Yeah. Right.
Next!
Yeah, right.
Next! You know, well, you got some potential, kid, but you need a lot more work. Next!
Oh.
And I'm like, but I was the star in Crown Point, Indiana. You know, I did all the Rotary concerts and the Kiwanis, and I was in the newspaper, and when I was in the show, they said, here's what Alan Kretschmar is doing now, folks. Come out and see him. Next!
Oh, my.
So then reality sets in.
Yeah.
You know, then you don't really believe when you're reading, you know, your curriculum coursework in college, then they say 99% of actors don't work, and you've got to be crazy. Do something else, kid. The business doesn't want you, doesn't need you. It's full. You can't make a living. You know, only the top stars make a living. Everybody else makes peanuts. You're like, oh, yeah, but I was the star. So that's going to be no problem for me. I'm going to jump right over that hurdle, you know.
Yeah.
But no, I didn't jump right over that hurdle. Finally, in 1984, I got my first professional job, which was the Smoky Mountain Passion Play in the Smoky Mountains of Tennessee, which is very nice, very beautiful. And then I went into dinner theater, and Knoxville had a big dinner theater, the Knoxville Dinner Theater.
Mm-hmm.
And I stayed there for about 3 years, and I did all the shows at the Knoxville Dinner Theater for about 3 years.
So you were enjoying that?
Enjoying it, loving it, you know. This is the beginning of, I had 10 years, 84 to 94, where I was solely making my living as an actor.
Wow.
And loving every minute of it.
Yeah.
The Knoxville Dinner Theater, it was trashy stuff. I mean, any show where a guy's cheating on his wife and running around in his underwear, you know, with the lights out, you know, trying to get away from the guy chasing him because he's screwing around with his wife, it was all that trashy kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. It's fun.
But fun. Titles like, you know, The Girl in the Freudian Slip and The Line with a Dirty Man, you know, what? You know, I did do The Sunshine Boys, one well-known show,
mm-hmm.
and that was fun, and that mm-hmm. was fun, so...
So, okay, so 94 happens, and...
And I'm in Texas doing the State Musical of Texas. It was called Don't Mess with Texas. The State Musical was in San Antonio. It was based on their anti-litter campaign. They had a litter everywhere you grow in Texas, you saw the sign, Don't Mess with Texas on the billboards, you know, don't litter. So there's one guy whose name was George Malanaise, if I remember. He made a musical out of this whole thing. It was a compilation. He took songs from Oklahoma and took songs from this show and that show, Will Rogers Follies, And he put them all together in this State Musical of Texas, Don't Mess with Texas, and I did that for a summer. And right in the middle of that, the worst thing in the world happened to me. I came to my senses. I was like, you know, this can't last forever. I'm 35, you know. Am I going to eat fast food forever? Am I going to do this forever? You know, and I thought, no, and I took myself out of it voluntarily.
Oh, my God.
You know, isn't that just the stupidest thing you've ever heard?
Well, it's not. I don't think it's stupid at all, but I have the sense from you that you would now wish you hadn't.
Yeah, I definitely not wish I hadn't.
Right.
So I took myself out of it, and I went to grad school, Florida State, for social studies and education to become a teacher.
Well, and, the other performing profession.
Right. And I don't know if I just got scared, you know, or something.
Well,
I don't
maybe
know.
Maybe you heard your father's voice.
I heard my father's voice,
right.
You know, and he'd been so good to me. And when your father speaks, you can't just blow that off, or
no.
I couldn't.
No.
You know, and he wrote me a letter, and he said, you know, I'd already been thinking about it. You know, how long can this go on? You know, I've been pretty lucky the last 10 years. And I've done Shakespeare and dinner theater and cabaret,
yeah.
And you know, and I've had my own children's theater company.
It's not luck, though.
You know, and I didn't believe in myself.
Yeah,
for some reason, I wasn't believing in myself.
You lost that thing that that 10-year-old boy had.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and my dad said, "Come on, you know, come back home. I'm not feeling well. Your mother's not feeling well.
Oh, dear.
We need you, son. You know,
oh,
we need you to take care of your mother.
Yeah. Right.
And come to your senses." And so I went to grad school. I borrowed $25,000 student loan and went to grad school for education. You know, and
you're
I became a teacher.
You're a good boy is what you are.
Yeah, yeah. And for 10 years I was a teacher. And the 10th year I finally realized I stunk at it.
No!
This is awful. You know? What I finally did was they have this website called RateYourTeacher.com.
Yeah.
After 10 years of teaching, I looked at that website, and I looked up my name,
right.
RateYourTeacher.com, and I saw the comments from parents, teachers, students.
Oh, my God.
And my jaw hit the floor, and I was like, oh, my goodness, I got to get out of here. I'm the worst thing to hit teaching since, you know, since No Child Left Behind.
Oh.
So I grabbed my wife, and I fled to Las Vegas for a year, and I acted in Las Vegas. There's a show that's a long-running show in Las Vegas. It's been there downtown. It was called the Fitzgerald. Now it's called the D. It's right next to the Golden Nugget downtown on Fremont Street, called Marriage Can Be Murder.
Uh-huh.
It's an interactive murder mystery show, and I met the director, Eric Post, and he liked me, and so I spent 6 months doing Marriage Can Be Murder in Las Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
And I filmed the commercials and commercials, and I did a Hungarian movie. I don't speak a word of Hungarian, but I did a movie that will only be shown in Hungary. And then did a Japanese movie, and then my wife said, well, let's go back to Florida. So I came back to Florida.
Go back to Florida? Oh, is that where your parents were? And
They passed on by this time.
Well,
so
go back to Florida. So far I haven't.
I taught in Florida. I went to Florida State when I quit.
Oh, that's right.
I went to school
in Florida
State,
right.
And I taught in Florida in Sarasota and Venice and Northport for 10 years.
I see. So you came back here.
I came back here, went to Florida State, and then I got right into graduated, and then the very next fall I got my first teaching job at Venice Area Middle School.
Okay, so when did you come back?
I came back in 95, and I got my graduate degree in 98.
No, I mean, when did you come back from Vegas to here?
We came back from Vegas in 2012, the very next year.
Oh, my God.
We came right back, yeah.
So you've mm-hmm. been here now for almost
right.
for 3 years
uh-huh.
and change,
and I've
right?
been at the Players and at the Venice Theater and, you know.
So now you're doing it again.
Yes, and, you know, I'm getting my foot back in the water, right? I do have a day job, which I do at night, but, you know. So. But, that's going to go away. So, you know, I believe in myself again.
Yay!
So nothing's going to stop me now.
Well, okay, let's talk about what it is you're doing here. You are Big Daddy in...
Big Daddy Polick.
Yes, in Cat on a Hot Tin Roof.
Tennessee Williams Cat on a Hot Tin Roof.
Yeah.
Right in the middle of rehearsals. We open September 3rd at the Players.
Yeah. The 3rd to the 13th, if I get that
3rd
right.
to the 13th, right.
Okay,
and,
talk about it. Talk about the play. Make believe... Whoever's listening has never seen the play.
Okay, well, it's a classic. Many people, I think, have seen the movie with Elizabeth Taylor and Paul Newman, mm-hmm. which I've never seen it, but I understand that it changes the plot a little bit.
Ah.
Because the play was very much ahead of its time for the 50s. It's about, oh my goodness, Maggie the Cat, played by Catherine Parks, and her husband Brick, played by Raphael Petlock. They're kind of not getting along, she wants to have a child, and he's not interested because he had a past friendship with a fellow named Skipper who has committed suicide. And there's, you know, and their Big Daddy is kind of like the patriarch of the clan, mm-hmm. who for the last 3 years has struggled with the belief that he has had cancer. Now he's found out that it's just a spastic colon. What he doesn't know is that, yes, it's really cancer and that they've lied to him. And so the show is kind of about, as much as I hate to do analysis while I'm actually rehearsing a show. You know, I think it almost interferes with me creating the character to do too much analysis of it. But it kind of deals with the whole idea of deception, self-deception, and the way we deceive others to get what we want, and how we deceive ourselves to protect ourselves.
Yes,
and all these deep themes. But it was powerful stuff back in 1955, and it still is.
It still resonates. Yeah, I think it still is.
Yeah.
It still is, and I think Tennessee was ahead of his time.
He certainly was. Yeah, he was talking about things that were definitely in the closet back then.
Yeah.
But you could put them on stage, and you could see the reality of it, and you could say, okay.
Yeah, okay, all right. Okay, so I ask another question, and it is, having given as much of your life as you have, to the art of acting. Is there anything you would say about what that's like?
I get so much fulfillment out of it, you know, that you can just blow off, I think. Even though there's a lot of real pain that goes with the frustration that you have to deal with, you know. It's just when you're up there on stage and you're in the zone and you're doing what you know God put you on this earth to do.
Yes.
You know, it's just, there's just so much peace and fulfillment, you know, that it just, you forget everything else, you know, but you do have to sacrifice, you know, you have to really, really, you have to have what Boris Karloff used to call, you have to have the fire in your belly for it, you know.
Yeah.
And you have to keep learning, and you have to become really sympathetic to the human animal, you know. You have to understand people, and you have to like people and understand people and get to know them and not be judgmental, you know.
You mean so that you can play them?
So that you can understand them enough to put their lives on stage. And not being judgmental kind of makes you a better person. You know?
That's a very interesting thing.
If I phrased it correctly.
No, I think you have phrased it perfectly. And I don't think I ever heard anybody, and I've interviewed a lot of actors, talk about it in quite that way. That in order to be a good actor, in order to really be the characters that you are asked to play.
Right.
You have to be able not to judge them.
Yeah, and you have to love them.
You have to love them.
You have to not judge them.
Yeah, you have to value them. You have to think that they deserve.
Right.
To be.
At least understanding, because even the worst person, you know, doesn't think, oh, I'm going to get up today and do it. Looks like maybe some Shakespearean characters back in the day, but, you know, they don't get up in the morning saying, I'm going to be evil today. You know,
they're people with
problems or people with needs. Yeah. You know, and you have to sympathize.
I think that's right.
You have to love them.
I think that's right. And I think the other thing you said is also right, that having to do this as an actor makes you a better person.
Yeah.
It just does. You can't do that only for the characters that you're playing and then not do it in the world.
Because you got to create the reality of the character, and that requires understanding and sympathizing. Thought and sympathy.
Yeah. A very brilliant actor that I interviewed told me that one of the things that he learned about, as an actor, one of the things he learned was that he was, I want to say forced, but I think able is probably right, to find aspects of himself that he would not have believed were there.
Right.
Because he had to find them because the character had them.
Right, yeah, yeah. I played Jekyll and Hyde, you know, and I had to find the reality of playing Mr. Hyde, you know.
Yes.
And you almost have a moment of self-doubt where you say to yourself, this can't be in me.
That's what he said, too.
You know, this can't be in me.
Yeah, right.
You know, but I think the human beings have everything in them.
I do too.
They do. They have everything in them.
Yeah, I think I do too. And he said that eventually this was freeing for him.
Yeah, it is freeing.
Mm-hmm. It allowed him to find things in himself that he wasn't actualizing because it wasn't nice.
Right.
You know, right? Right.
Yeah.
Okay, so just take a second to think if there's anything else you would like to say to us about what acting means, feels like, does, causes.
Well, I don't know what it feels like to me. You know, it's just joy, fulfillment, and I think it's very important. You know, because people learn about themselves and the world around them through actors.
Yes, I think.
You know, they get inspired. You know, if they're going down the wrong road, sometimes they get straightened out by actors, you know. Or they learn to understand themselves through actors.
Yes.
You know, and I'm going to give a shout-out to our great director, if I can.
Please do.
I don't want to neglect Elliot Raines, who was just, I mean, I've grown so much just in the 2 weeks that I've been working with him, you know. I've just grown exponentially.
Wow. Do you want to talk a little bit about the kind of thing that...
Because he's so into the subtext of getting under the skin of the characters, you know. And on a technical level, you know, Spencer Tracy, you know, the world's greatest film actor, used to say, you know, if you're acting, don't let anybody catch you at it, you know. And Elliot Raines has helped me to find that part of me, you know. When he's been able to draw me back from, you know, as he says, do it through the keyhole, not the open door, you know. He's been able to take me to that next level, which is almost the less is more level, you know, which has made me grow so exponentially just in the last couple of weeks that I'm so grateful.
This wonderful.
You know, and he's already one of my most favorite directors.
Yeah.
And it's going to be great. The cast is strong all the way down the line.
Yes.
And Catherine Parks is
tremendous. I know, she's
tremendous.
Wonderful. I know.
Raphael Petlock, my first time working with him, and he's tremendous.
Yes, he is.
You know.
Yeah, he got got an incredible cast.
Yeah.
And he is. He's a wonderful director. And this is his production.
Yeah, it is.
This is a production for his production company. Right. And there will be more of this.
Yes.
We can look forward to more of this. But before we look forward to more of it, we're going to look forward to this.
Yeah, hope so.
Opening on the 3rd.
The 3rd of September on the stage of the Players Theater.
Yes, thank you very much, Alan.
Well, thank you so much. I've enjoyed our talk so much.
Me too. I interview people who make their living or their life with an art. I do that because when you listen to them, you can hear what it sounds like to be who you really are. The Lynn Show is about being who you really are. And unfortunately, too many of our childhoods don't make this, never mind a priority, they don't even make it possible. In too many childhoods, things like, don't do that, who do you think you are, don't embarrass me, all kinds of statements, not only verbal, physical, you know, the rolling of the eyes, the turning away, the neglect. All of these tell us that something about us is not okay. Something about us is going to cost us the attention, the affection, the care of those giants on whom our life depends. Of course, I'm talking about our parents. But it's not just the family of origin which is capable of discouraging us from being who we really are. Teachers who have the capacity to encourage, to discover, as if you've listened to any of my interviews, you hear over and over again, the teacher who saw something in a child that he or she didn't know she had and allowed that to flower. But for as many teachers as do that, there are teachers who chastise and criticize and embarrass. Is peer pressure to be what the group is and not to be what you are. There's cultural pressure. Boys don't do that. Girls don't do that. The religious organization also have very strong ideas about what it is good to be and bad to be. And if you happen not to be what the good stuff is, then you are under terrific pressure to deny aspects of yourself. And in my experience as a therapist, what I see is that we human beings are amazingly capable of denying who we are. And then, having denied it so cleverly, we forget. And so many people come into adulthood without access to all of who they are. And again, I interview people like Catherine and Alan so you can hear when they talk about who they really are. You hear the passion. You hear the energy. You hear the commitment. You hear the joy. I'm not saying that there are no downsides, that when you are who you really are, everything goes well. Of course, that's not true. But when you make the choice to be who you really are, you can tolerate the downside, the disappointment, the regret.
And so, as always, you know, it's my hope that when you listen to people like Alan and Catherine, you say to yourself, is this true in my life? Am I doing what I believe I was meant to do? And if it's not so, if anything I've said has triggered the idea that you may have put not only an art behind you, but a way of being, it may not be too late to recover yourself. You may be able to come back to the person you sacrificed, left behind. And again, if you want to talk more about that, go up on my website, thelinshow.com. Click on email me, ask me any questions you'd like. So as always, I hope you got something you can use from this show. Something that you didn't know that you now know. Something that made you giggle. Something that's going to make you want to go out and see Cat on a Hot Tin Roof. Something that will bring you back. Because I will be back next week, same time, same station. And as always, I sure hope you will be too.
You see, I'm getting older. My hair is turning gray. Oh, you see my face and figure. I've both seen better days. Well, I won't be retiring. I won't slip out of sight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I just keep returning like some goddamn boomerang. No, I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. You see that I have had my shot. My time has come and gone. Oh, won't I please get off the stage, let someone else get on. Well, I won't be relegated or leave without a fight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Life's a bell I keep on ringing, not a chime that I once rang. You may think it's unseemly. Well, I don't give a dang. No, I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Rising from the ashes, every chance I get. I may be running out of time, but it ain't over yet. 'Cause me and Sister Phoenix, we won't give up the flight. No, no, we will not go gentle into that good night. And I won't go with a whimper. I'm going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I may not be as juicy, hell, but I still got some tang. So you won't hear me simper. I may have got to